Makeshift Stories presents Way Station.
A place out of time where the world is powered by coal and things are not always as they seem. Please stick around at the end of tonight's episode to listen to an important program note on the recommended listening order of episodes in Seasons 1 and 2. And now, sit back, close your eyes, and open your imagination as we present Episode 35, Way Station, The Shadows.
Prologue. This is the fourth installment in the series Way Station. If you haven't heard the previous stories, we'd recommend that you first listen to Episode 23, The Europa Cafe, Episode 27, Surveillance, and Episode 31, The Archives. Our story to date. After an apparently random traffic accident, Tim's parents died of their injuries, leaving him alone and in debt for the medical expenses. Unable to pay, the insurance company auctioned off his obligations to a family who owns a cafe, where he now has to work off the debt until their daughter, Maya, finishes college. Tim maintains the cafe's global net access point and develops an interest in obsolete net systems. Finding the code for an ancient protocol called Gopher, he builds a site using the cafe's wireless access point to publish it. Soon after, he discovers that someone has been accessing his site. Two mysterious customers show up at the cafe, knowing more than they should about Maya. Spooked, Tim and Maya fear that they're being spied on, but don't understand why. While out on a break the next day, Tim is sent a mysterious message through his enhanced reality glasses, warning him to check the cafe's server records, then meet in an alley the next morning. When Tim examines the logs, he finds that someone has doctored them to make it look like the cafe's customers have been connecting to unauthorized sites in violation of net access laws. After removing the false entries, Tim takes Maya to meet the author of the warning message, who turns out to be a wealthy eccentric lady called Anita from an old waystation family. Anita is dressed like a bag lady to disguise herself and claims to be part of an ancient group that is trying to preserve the true history of the world. To convince Tim and Maya, she takes him to a hidden archive of printed books and shows him how, over time, a secret organization she calls the Presence has been altering the official digital historic record and subtly influencing events. And now we present this month's episode, Way Station Part 4, The Shadows. Maya sat impatiently beside Tim, listening to the eccentric old lady who called herself Anita. She was positioned at the other end of a cold metal table that had been shoehorned into the narrow central aisle of her weird secret archive. It seemed to Maya that Anita had spent the better part of the last hour trying to convince him that all of history was a subtly constructed lie. She was starting to get very creeped out by the paranoid babble and wanted it to stop. The members of a supposed secret society posing as customers at the cafe. Tim's apparent accidental entanglement with them. The archive itself all seemed too improbable, too fantastic, not to be the product of a deranged mind that saw enemies and conspiracies around every corner. At least that was what Maya was trying to convince herself. But every minute she sat, listening to the intricate plot that Anita was weaving, she became less sure. She desperately wanted to leave and escape back to the world she knew, one that was not a veneer constructed by shadows. But a small part of her knew that world was gone forever. Maya noticed that Anita was starting to stare more at Tim. Anxious to end this as fast as possible, she nudged him under the table, then motioned with her eyes that she was going to go. But before Tim could react, recognition worked its way across Anita's weathered face.
Tim, what did you say your last name was?
Panansky,
Tim replied without thinking.
Panansky.
Anita slowly repeated, letting each syllable roll off her tongue. As she repeated his name again, she flipped up a small hidden screen that had been mounted into the surface of the table. She gestured several commands and waited, impatiently tapping her fingers on the hard surface, while the terminal ran a search through some unnamed database.
"There's something familiar about your name,"
Anita mused.
"I think it had something to do with a series of traffic anomalies that we were tracking 2 years ago."
She paused as the terminal beeped and rendered its results to the screen. When Tim saw the title, his face contorted and he started to get up.
"I don't want to talk about this. If you insist, I'm leaving."
Anita sympathetically motioned him down.
"I don't want to drag up bad memories, Tim, but you should hear this. What drew our attention to the incident, Tim, was the bus. It had been accident-free for 10 years, and has been since. But on that day, and only that day, the onboard routing system failed to turn the traffic light red. So your parents' car entered the intersection as the bus was going through. Your parents were very punctual, Tim. They crossed that street just after the 7:15 a.m. bus, every day for 2 years."
Deeply suppressed emotions involuntarily started to well up, making Tim's voice tremble slightly.
You couldn't know that,"
he demanded with a failing sense of confidence.
"We broke into the traffic records for the intersection, Tim, and ran an analysis on them,"
Anita calmly replied.
"This is exactly the type of event that the presence uses. Explainable and random, as long as you don't look at them too closely, or in the context of the subsequent outcomes they trigger. At the time, we couldn't see any significant connections, so we stopped following events triggered by the incident. But now I'm not so sure. You're here in the archive."
Anita stared thoughtfully at Tim, and with a hint of apprehension continued.
"Well, perhaps I'm making connections where there aren't any. But there's too many small coincidences. Your employment at the cafe, the server you built, the odd customers, the unexpected inspection of the cafe's compliance records."
Anita stopped, closed the terminal panel, and leaned back in her chair. Silence filled the odd antiseptic space until Maya spoke up.
"I'm still not convinced. She and her paranoid group."
Maya threw a dismissive look at Anita.
"They're just chasing figments and shadows, Tim. I don't think it'd be wise to get involved. We should go."
A persistent beeping startled Anita. She instinctively reached for the inside pocket of her modest gray jacket and pulled out a tiny handheld terminal, tapped the screen 3 times, and looked at it for several seconds before sliding the glowing device over to Maya.
"Do you recognize those two?"
Maya reluctantly picked up the device and angled its screen so she could see the video image, then nearly dropped it.
"It's the odd man and the woman from the Europa,"
she gasped.
"And they're downstairs right now, nosing around. It's time for you two to go."
Anita abruptly stood up and quickly ushered them to the entry airlock. She made a hand gesture to an unseen sensor buried somewhere in a wall. The inner door slammed shut, and with a hiss of outrushing air, the outer door obediently slid aside, revealing the dirty storage area they had come through earlier that morning. Once through, the entry resealed itself, melding back into the side of a crate. Tim started to walk towards the elevator.
"No, not that way. The only exit from there is through the lobby. I can't afford to have you seen here. They're already suspicious. I can't risk them looking any closer at the building. You'll have to take the old fire escape. It exits onto the street on the other side of the tower."
Tim started to object, but Anita cut him off.
"Don't worry. There's no access to the stairwell below the 10th floor. Now quick, go."
With surprising strength, Anita pushed them towards an ancient-looking metal door with red symbols peeling off its stained and dented aluminum surface. The corroded, disused hinges groaned as Anita forced it open and gruffly pushed them through.
"When you reach the street, casually walk away. Don't run. It'll draw their attention,"
Anita advised, then turned and dashed for the elevator.
"Hey, but won't they see you?"
Tim called after her. She turned her head back and smiled.
"I'm counting on it. I want them to see me. Alone. Don't worry. We'll be keeping an eye on you to make sure that they stay away. Now go. You need to be out of the building and back onto Main or Broadway by the time I confront them in the lobby."
She pulled open the cage door to the elevator, got in, then retrieved what looked like a remote from her jacket and pointed it back into the warehouse space. Tim and Maya watched, transfixed, as the dust on the worn concrete floor awoke and began to cover their footprints. After a few seconds, it looked like no one had been through the space in decades. Satisfied, Anita impatiently waved for them to leave, then closed the elevator gate. As the ancient conveyance began to rattle its way back down, Tim let go of the heavy fire door. It slammed shut behind them, raising a cloud of stale-smelling dust as they started down the dimly lit stairs. Maya stood beside Tim, suspiciously eyeing a raggedly dressed and obviously smelly old man. He had managed to curl himself up into the thin shadow that hugged the crumbling shape of the 300-year-old Fort Selkirk gate. The walls of the old fort had been torn down 2 centuries ago to make room for the growth of Way Station. Only the gate and a few meters of blackened, cracking limestone on either side were all that remained of the great stone fort that had been the birthplace of the city. Now, vastly overshadowed by the remaining building of the Ashton Towers and overgrown with stressed-looking Virginia creepers, the stone gate had become a respite from the noon hour sun for street people. This one, Maya concluded, wasn't paying any attention to them. But then again, wouldn't they be good at hiding their intentions if they were part of the old lady's paranoid plot? Maya shook the thought from her mind before it could circle around in an endless anxiety-inspired loop. Tim tapped Maya on her shoulder, trying to pull her attention away from the slumped figure.
"I don't think anyone followed us, Maya. Let's walk over to Main, then up Broadway and back to the cafe. That way we can hide in the lunch hour crowd."
Maya didn't hear him. She was still lost in thought, trying to rationalize the appearance of the odd couple from the cafe at the Ashton Towers. Instead of trying to get her attention again, Tim simply led Maya up the gravel path away from the gate and out into the sweltering throngs that crammed along Main Street between the hot bricks of the buildings and the impatient, surging traffic. As they turned off Main onto Broadway, out of the corner of her eye, Maya spotted a suspicious-looking man who didn't fit in with the Way Station crowds. The white, untanned skin of his face almost glowed in contrast to his expensive, dark, immaculate clothes. This far below the Arctic Circle, the man's appearance seemed to scream of his northern origins. Maya quickly risked another glance and saw that he had turned on to Broadway with them. She tried to quiet her suspicions by assuring herself she was being influenced by the crazy old lady's delusions. But when they reached the first intersection and the traffic light changed, Maya pushed him up a side street, then down a back lane that paralleled the busy avenue. Once they were in the alley, she turned around and saw the man walk up the side street without looking toward them. He didn't turn into the alley. She sighed with relief.
"What's that about?"
Tim demanded. Too embarrassed to admit her concern, Maya joked.
"Just trying to make sure we weren't being followed."
They quickly walked down the alley, shadowed by the old limestone buildings that lined the south side. Huddled in the dark recesses between the garbage bins and disused parking ramps, Maya instinctively knew more of Anita's friends must be lurking. Anywhere that was cool during the day was likely to be inhabited by at least one or two. Feeling she was being watched, Maya picked up the pace. When they finally reached Hargrave Street, she turned back towards Broadway, felt a shiver of relief run up her spine, then pushed him across the tree-lined avenue toward the welcoming red brick of the building that housed the Europa Cafe. Maya paused on the concrete steps and instinctively surveyed the adjacent sidewalks. Yet another street person, almost identical to the man under the old fort's gate, slouched in the shade between the fake Doric columns of the entryway to the old brick apartments next door. Maya turned the other way, and her heart jumped several beats. Standing across the street, trying to look away when Maya caught his eye, was the northern-looking man. Startled, she tried to force Tim and herself through the cafe doors, but only managed to make them both collide into the hard glass surface.
"Maya, the door's locked,"
Tim complained.
"Weird. Your mother must have stepped out. Why would she close the shop at the busiest time of day?"
Maya dug desperately into her pocket, pulled out the key, then pushed past Tim to unlock the door. Once they were both inside, she secured it again, looked across the street, and saw that the man was gone. Maya collapsed into a booth near the door, but far enough back from the windows so she was hidden in the reflections from passers-by on the street. Tim looked quizzically at her for an explanation.
"That old lady really got to me. For a moment, I thought we were being followed."
Maya sighed, trying to calm her rattled nerves.
"I know you're spooked, Maya, but why's the cafe closed?"
Maya didn't answer. She was still fixated on pedestrians plodding up and down the sidewalk in perspiring clumps. Tim walked over to the bar and examined the cash register. It appeared to have been abandoned halfway through a transaction.
"Maya! Maya! Where's your mother? The cash was left open and her keys are still in the till."
Maya woke from her trance.
I guess I was just imagining it. What did you say about my mother?"
"Maya, where is she?"
Tim impatiently repeated.
"She must have been in an incredible rush. She didn't even lock the cash drawer. Maybe you should call and find out what's up."
Maya recovered her composure and looked carefully around the empty cafe. There were still uncleared tables from the mid-morning coffee break crowd, and two empty cups waited under the spigots of the steaming coffee machine, which was zealously flashing its readiness to spew out its now stale brew.
"That's odd. She'd never just leave things like this,"
Maya noted, feeling her recently discarded anxiety spring back to life. She fished for her mobile phone, tapped through several menus, then waited.
No answer.
She looked at Tim, who was still puzzling over the till. Tim motioned her over.
"Take a look at this."
Maya nervously glanced out the window. She noted that the street person from next door had moved and now appeared to be sleeping on the bench in front of the shop. The night shutters suddenly started to rattle down the front windows, blocking her view and making her jump.
"Tim!"
Maya scolded.
"Just trying to get your attention. Come on, look at this."
Tim pointed to the total frozen in mid-transaction on the till screen.
$1,055? No one would spend that much in a coffee shop."
Maya nudged Tim aside, then touched the screen and pulled up the transaction records.
"It was never entered. The last completed transaction was at 10:38. This isn't like my mom, Tim. She'd never leave a transaction open, let alone leave before we got back. Something must have happened."
Maya tried her parents' number again, but when she got their voicemail, she started to rummage through the piles of invoices and receipts that papered the counter around the till. "I can't believe she wouldn't have left a note." Tim edged down the counter to the staff terminal. A complex pattern of light and color danced across its sleeping screen. With a flick of his hand, the machine woke up. The patterns abruptly cut off, replaced by the net access log.
"She didn't log out of the net terminal either,"
Tim noted as his eyes scanned down the list of entries.
"What was the total left on the till again?"
he asked.
10:55,
Maya replied as she started to investigate the dark shelves below the cash register.
"I think that might be a time, Maya."
Tim glanced back at the net access log.
"There's two sessions listed at 10:55, one from the staff terminal, and the other from a mobile connection. Have you heard of this place?"
Maya drifted in behind Tim.
"That's a real estate agent in New Hudson Beach. My parents were looking for a summer place."
"Do you think they left to look at one?"
Tim copied the link and pasted it into a net browser.
No. They'd have told me, anyway. Mum would never leave the cafe in such a mess.
Having found the right page to display, the browser twitched, then quickly rendered a picture of a beachside home with a price and address. Tim instinctively made the print gesture, causing the printer under the counter to buzz to life.
That seems a little out of my parents' price range,
Maya commented.
What's in the other entry?
Tim had the machine step back and expand the mobile access record. He frowned.
There's no external links, just inbound packets. But this is odd.
Tim made several quick signs, and the terminal obediently opened another admin log.
This isn't good, Maya.
Tim was about to explain what happened when the front door rattled. Someone began banging on the reinforced glass. With the night shutters down, they couldn't see who was trying to get in.
That's got to be Mum. She must have forgotten her key.
Maya started for the door. Tim darted around the corner of the bar and grabbed her arm.
Maya, it's not your Mum.
She tried to pull loose, but he held on harder and pulled her back to the staff terminal.
Look, I switched on the security cameras.
Maya squinted at a flickering fisheye view of the cafe entrance. Standing on the stairs, bent by the tiny camera lens, stood two disproportionately large figures dressed in the starched white uniforms of the Net Regulatory Bureau. They banged impatiently again on the glass, this time causing it to rattle in its frame. Tim started to frantically gesture to the terminal.
What are you doing, Tim?
Maya questioned.
Trashing the server records. They've been altered again.
He explained as his gestures became more frantic.
Tim, you can't destroy the access records. They can take away our net license.
The knocking continued to grow louder and more violent, making Maya expect the glass to shatter at any moment.
Better that than have them find what's been added to these logs,
Tim irritably exclaimed. Nervously, Maya glanced back at the security screen. An uncontrollable bolt of fear shot through her body. Behind the Net Bureau officers, on the other side of the street, stood the Northerner, calmly watching.
Done. Let's go.
Tim grabbed the printout from the printer, then dragged a protesting Maya through the back door.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode. Make Sure Stories was always intended to contain both serial and one-off episodes. Looking back, we realize that we've not always been clear about this. So here is a recommended listening order. The first season, episodes 1 to 20, should be heard in sequence.
From episode 21 on, there are two separate storylines, Waystation and The Other's Story. Additionally, we start at Somewhere Sometime, a series of standalone tales that can be listened to in any order. When we introduce an episode, you'll notice that we now mention the name of the series that it belongs to. So, if you haven't heard the previous installments, please go back in the feed and catch up.
To help clear things up, we started including prologues in the episodic stories that recap the plot and let you know what previous episodes you should hear. We apologize for any confusion there may have been in the past, and hope the addition of the prologues will help. If there's ever a question about the listening order, please go to our website at makeshiftstories.com. The right-hand menu lists serial stories in order. You may have also noted that in recent episodes we have stopped using a lot of sound effects, and are presenting the stories in audiobook style. We are doing this to cut down on production time so we can focus more on improving the writing and narration. Like always, if you like the webcast, please tell your friends about us, or visit the website at makeshiftstories.com, or send us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com. All sound effects are licensed from soundsnap.com, and the opening theme is Pod Safe Music, licensed from premiumbeat.com. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License.